Knowing the time of your death is one of those strange bonuses that comes with being a true magic user, and on the whole it is a bonus. Many a wizard has passed away happily drinking the last of his wine cellar and incidentally owing very large sums of money. Granny Weatherwax had always wondered how it felt, what it was that you suddenly saw looming up, and what it turned out to be was a blankness. People think that they live life as a moving dot travelling from the past into the future, with memory streaming out behind them like some kind of mental cometary tail. But memory spreads out in front as well as behind. It's just that most humans aren't good at dealing with it, and so it arrives as premonitions, forebodings, intuitions, and hunches. Witches are good at dealing with it. And to suddenly find a blank where these tendrils of the future should be has much the same effect on a witch as emerging from a cloud bank and seeing a team of Sherpas looking down on him does on an airline pilot. She'd got a few days, and then that was it. She'd always expected to have a bit of time to herself, get the garden in order, have a good clean-up around the place so that whatever witch took over wouldn't think she'd been a sloven, pick out a decent burial plot, and then spend some time sitting out in the rocking chair, doing nothing at all except looking at the trees and thinking about the past. Now, no chance. And other things were happening. Her memory seemed to be playing up. Perhaps this is what happened. Perhaps you just drained away towards the end, like old Nanny Gripes, who ended up putting the cat on the stove and the kettle out for the night. Granny shut the door behind her and lit a candle. There was a box in the dresser drawer. She opened it on the kitchen table and took out the carefully folded piece of paper. There was a pen and ink in there, too. After some thought, she picked up where she'd left off. "And to my friend Githa Og, I leave my bed day, and the rag ruggy the smith in bad ass made for me, and the matching jug and basin, and what's name set she always had her eye on, and my broomstick, what will be right as rain with a bit of work. To Magret Garlic, I leave the contentees elsewhere in this box, my silver tea service, with the milk jug in the shape of a humerus cow, what is an heirloom, also the clocky, what belonged to my mother, but I charge her always to keep it wound, for when the clocky stops..." There was a noise outside. If anyone else had been in the room with her, Granny Weatherwax would have thrown open the door boldly, but she was by herself. She picked up the poker very carefully, moved surprisingly soundlessly to the door, given the nature of her boots, and listened intently. There was something in the garden. It wasn't much of a garden. There were the herbs and the soft fruit bushes, a bit of lawn, and of course the beehives, and it was open to the woods. The local wildlife knew better than to invade a witch's garden. Granny opened the door carefully. The moon was setting. Pale silver light turned the world into monochrome. There was a unicorn on the lawn. The stink of it hit her. Granny advanced, holding the poker in front of her. The unicorn backed away and pawed at the ground. Granny saw the future plain. She already knew the when. Now she was beginning to apprehend the how. "So," she said under her breath, "I knows where you came from, and you can damn well get back there." The thing made a feint at her, but the poker swung towards it. "Can't stand the iron, eh? Well, just you trot back to your mistress and tell her that we know all about the iron in Lancre, and I knows about her. She's to keep away, understand? This is my place." Then it was moonlight. Now it was day. There was quite a crowd in what passed for Lancre's main square. Not much happened in Lancre anyway, and a duel between witches was a sight worth seeing. Granny Weatherwax arrived at 9:15. Nanny Og was waiting on a bench by the tavern. She had a towel around her neck and was carrying a bucket of water in which floated a sponge.
"What's that for?" said Granny.
"Half time, and I done you a plate of oranges."
She held up the plate. Granny snorted.
"You look as if you could do with eating something anyway," said Nanny. "You don't look as if you've had anything today."
She glanced down at Granny's boots and the grubby hem of her long black dress. There were scraps of bracken and bits of heather caught on it.
"You daft old besom," she hissed. "What have you been doing?"
"I had to..."
"You've been up at the stones, haven't you, trying to hold back the gentry?"
"Of course," said Granny.
Her voice wasn't faint. She wasn't swaying. But her voice wasn't faint and she wasn't swaying, Nanny Og could see, because Granny Weatherwax's body was in the grip of Granny Weatherwax's mind.
"Someone's got to," she added.
"'You could have come and asked me.'
"'You'd have talked me out of it.'
Nanny Ogg leaned forward.
"'You're right, Esme?'
"'Fine, I'm fine. Nothing wrong with me, all right?'
"'Have you had any sleep at all?' she said.
"'Well, you haven't, have you? "'And then you think you can just stroll down here "'and confound this girl just like that?' "'I don't know,' said Granny Weatherwax.
"'Nanny Ogg looked hard at her.
"'You don't know, do you?' she said in a softer tone of voice. "'Oh, well, you better sit down here before you fall down. "'Suck an orange. They'll be here in a few minutes.'
"'No, she won't,' said Granny. "'She'll be late.'
"'How do you know?'
"'No good making an entrance if everyone isn't there to see you, is it? "'That's headology.'
"'In fact, the young coven arrived at 12:20 "'and took up station on the steps of the Market Pentangle "'on the other side of the square.
"'Look at them,' said Granny Weatherwax. "'All in black again.'
"'Well, we wear black too,' said Nanny Ogg, the reasonable.'
"'Only 'cause it's respectable and serviceable,' said Granny, morosely. "'Not because it's romantic. "'The lords and ladies might as well be here already.'
After some eye contact, Nanny Ogg ambled across the square and met Perdita in the middle. The young would-be witch looked worried under her makeup. She held a black lace handkerchief in her hands and was twisting it nervously.
"'Morning, Mrs. Ogg,' she said.
"'Afternoon, Agnes.'
What happens now?
Nanny Ogg took out her pipe and scratched her ear with it.
Dunno. Up to you, I suppose.
Dear Amanda says, why does it have to be here and now?
So's everyone can see, said Nanny Ogg. That's the point, ain't it? Nothing hole and corner about it. Everyone's got to know who's best at witchcraft. The whole town. Everyone sees the winner win and the loser lose. That way there's no argument, eh?
Perdita glanced towards the tavern. Granny Weatherwax had dozed off.
"'Quietly confident,' said Nanny Ogg, crossing her fingers behind her back.
"'What happens to the loser?'
said Perdita.
"'Nothing, really,' said Nanny Ogg. "'Generally she leaves the place. "'You can't be a witch if people seen you beat.'
"'Dear Amanda says she doesn't want to hurt the old lady too much,' said Perdita. "'Just teach her a lesson.'
"'That's nice. Esme's a quick learner.'
"'I wish this wasn't happening, Mrs. Ogg.'
"'That's nice.
"'Dear Amanda says Mistress Weatherwax has got a very impressive stare, Mrs. Ogg.'
"'That's nice.
"'So the test is just staring, Mrs. Ogg.'
Nanny put her pipe in her mouth.
"'You mean the old first one to blink or look away challenge?'
Yeah.'
"'Right.'
Nanny thought about it and shrugged.
"'Right. But we'd better do a magic circle first. Don't want anyone else getting hurt, do we?'
"'Do you mean using Scorpion runes or the triple invocation octogram?'
said Perdita. Nanny Ogg put her head on one side.
"'Never heard of them things, dear,' she said. "'I always does a magic circle like this.'
She sidled crabwise away from the fat girl, dragging one toe in the dust. She edged around in a rough circle about 15 feet across, still dragging her boot until she backed into Perdita.
"'Sorry. There. Done it.'
"'That's a magic circle?'
"'Right. People can come to harm, else. All kinds of magic zipping around the place when witches fight.
But you didn't chant or anything?'
"'No.
There has to be a chant, doesn't there?'
"'Dunno. Never done one.'
"'Oh!'
"'I could sing you a comic song if you likes,' said Nanny helpfully.
No.
Perdita had never heard Nanny sing, but news gets around.
"'I like your black lace hanky,' said Nanny, not a bit abashed. "'Very good for not showing the bogies.'
Perdita stared at the circle as though hypnotised.
Shall we start, then?'
"'Right.'
Nanny Ogg scurried back to the bench and elbowed Granny in the ribs.
"'Wake up!'
Granny opened an eye.
"'I weren't asleep, I was just resting me eyes.
"'All you got to do is stare her down.'
"'At least she knows about the importance of the stare, then. "'Who does she think she is? "'I've been staring at people all my life.'
"'Yes, that's what's bothering me. "'Oh, who's Nana's little boy, then?'
"'The rest of the Ogg clan had arrived.' Granny Weatherwax personally disliked young Pusey. She disliked all small children, which is why she got on with them so well. In Pusey's case, she felt that no one should be allowed to wander around in just a vest, even if they were 4 years old, and the child had a permanently runny nose and ought to be provided with a handkerchief, or failing that, a cork. Nanny Ogg, on the other hand, was instant putty in the hands of any grandchild, even one as sticky as Pusey.
"Want sweetie?"
growled Pusey, in that curiously deep voice some young children have.
"Just in a moment, my duck. I'm talking to the lady,"
Nanny Ogg fluted.
"Want sweetie now?"
"Bugger off, my precious. Nana's busy right this minute."
Pusey pulled hard on Nanny Ogg's skirts.
"Now, sweetie now."
Granny Weatherwax leaned down until her impressive nose was about level with Pusey's gushing one.
"If you don't go away,"
she said gravely,
"I will personally rip your head off and fill it with snakes."
"There," said Nanny Ogg, "there's a lot of poor children in Clatch that'd be grateful for a curse like that."
Pusey's little face, after a second or two of uncertainty, split up into a pumpkin grin.
"Funny lady,"
he said.
"Tell you what," said Nanny, patting Pusey on the head and then absent-mindedly wiping her hand on her dress, "you see them young ladies on the other side of the square? They've got lots of sweeties."
Pusey waddled off.
"That's germ warfare, that is,"
said Granny Weatherwax.
"Come on," said Nanny. "Our Jason's put a couple of chairs in the circle. You sure you're all right?"
"I'll do."
Purdita Knit traipsed across the road again.
Mrs. Ogg?"
"Yes, dear?"
Diamanda says you don't understand. She says they won't be trying to outstare one another."
Magrat was bored. She'd never been bored when she was a witch. Permanently bewildered and overworked, yes, but not bored. She kept telling herself it'd probably be better when she really was queen, although she couldn't quite see how. In the meantime, she wandered aimlessly through the castle's many rooms, the swishing of her dress almost unheard above the background roar of the turbines of tedium. Hum, drum, hum, drum, hum, drum, hum, drum. She'd spent the whole morning trying to learn to do tapestry, because Millie assured her that's what queens did, and the sampler with its message, "God's bless this house," was even now lying forlornly on her chair. In the long gallery were huge tapestries of ancient battles, done by previous bored regal incumbents, and it was amazing how all the fighters had been persuaded to stay still long enough. And she'd looked at the many, many paintings of the queens themselves, all of them pretty, all of them well-dressed according to the fashion of their times, and all of them bored out of their tiny, well-shaped skulls. Finally, she went back to the solar. This was the big room on top of the main tower. In theory, it was there to catch the sun. It did. It also caught the wind and the rain. It was a sort of drift net for anything the sky happened to throw. She yanked on the bell pull that in theory summoned a servant. Nothing happened. After a couple of further pulls, and secretly glad of the exercise, she went down to the kitchen. She would have liked to spend more time there. It was always warm, and there was generally someone to talk to. But noblesse oblige, queens had to live above stairs. Below stairs there was only Sean Ogg, who was cleaning the oven of the huge iron stove and reflecting that this was no job for a military man.
"Where's everyone gone?"
Sean leapt up, banging his head on the stove.
Sorry, miss. Everyone's down in the square, miss. I'm only here because Mrs. Scorbick said she'd have my hide if I didn't get all that yuck off."
"What's happening in the square, then?"
"They say there's a couple of witches having a real set too, miss."
"What, not your mother and Granny Weatherwax?"
"Oh, no, miss. Some new witch."
"In Lancre? A new witch?"
"I think that's what Mum said."
"I'm going to have a look."
I don't think that'd be a good idea, miss," said Sean.
Magrat drew herself up regally.
"We happen to be queen," she said, "nearly. So you don't tell one can't do things, or one'll have you cleaning the privies."
"But I does clean the privies," said Sean in a reasonable voice. "Even the garde-robe."
"And that's going to go for a start," said Magrat, shuddering. "One's seen it."
"Doesn't bother me, miss. It'll give me Wednesday afternoons free," said Sean. "But what I meant was, you'll have to wait till I've gone down to the armoury to fetch my horn for the fanfare."
One won't need a fanfare, thank you very much.
But you've got to have a fanfare, miss.
One can blow my own trumpet, thank you.
Yes, miss.
Miss what?
Miss Queen.
And don't you forget it. Magrat arrived at as near to a run as was possible in the Queen outfit, which ought to have had casters. She found a circle of several hundred people, and near the edge a very pensive Nanny Ogg.
"What's happening, Nanny?"
Nanny turned.
"Oh, sorry, didn't hear no fanfare," she said. "I'd curtsy, only it's me legs."
Magrat looked past her at the two seated figures in the circle.
"What are they doing?"
"Staring contest."
"But they're looking at the sky."
"Bugger that Diamanda girl. She's got Esme trying to outstare the sun," said Nanny Ogg. "No looking away, no blinking."
"How long have they been doing it?"
"About an hour," said Nanny gloomily.
"That's terrible."
"It's bloody stupid, is what it is," said Nanny. "Can't think what's got into Esme, as if power's all there is to witching. She knows that. Witching's not power. It's how you harness it."
There was a pale gold haze over the circle from magical fallout.
"They'll have to stop at sunset," said Magrat.
"Esme won't last until sunset," said Nanny. "Look at her, all slumped up."
"I suppose you couldn't use some magic to..." Magrat began.
"Talk sense," said Nanny. "If Esme found out, she'd kick me round the kingdom. Anyway, the others had spotted."
"Perhaps we could create a small cloud or something," said Magrat.
"No, that's cheating."
"Well, you always cheat."
"I cheat for myself. You can't cheat for other people."
Granny Weatherwax slumped again.
"I could have it stopped," said Magrat.
"You'd make an enemy for life."
"I thought Granny was my enemy for life."
"If you think that, my girl, you've got no understanding," said Nanny. "One day you'll find out Esme Weatherwax is the best friend you ever had."
"But we've got to do something. Can't you think of anything?"
Nanny Ogg looked thoughtfully at the circle. Occasionally a little wisp of smoke curled up from her pipe. The magical duel was subsequently recorded in Birdwhistle's Book of Legends and Antiquities of the Ramtops, and went as follows. The duel being 90 minutes advanced, a small boy-child upon a sudden ran across the square and stepped within the magic circle, whereup he fell down with a terrible scream, also a flash. The oldie witch looked around, got out of her chair, picked him up, and carried him to his grandmother, then went back to her seat. Whilom the young witch never averted her eyes from the sun. But the other young witches stopped the duel, averring, "Look, Diamanda has won," the reason being Weatherwax looked away, whereupon the child's grandmother said in a loud voice, "Oh yes, pull the other oney. It have got bells on. This is not a contest about power, you stupid girls. It is a contest about witchcraft. Do you not even begin to know what being a witch is? Is a witch someone who would look round when she heard a child scream?" And the townspeople said, "Yes."
"That was wonderful," said Mrs. Quarney, the storekeeper's wife. "The whole town cheered. A true mythic quality."
They were in the tavern's back room. Granny Weatherwax was lying on a bench with a damp towel over her face.
"Yes, it was, wasn't it?" said Magrat.
"That girl was left without a leg to stand on, everyone says."
"Yes," said Magrat.
"Strutted off with her nose in a sling, as they say."
"Yes," said Magrat.
"Is the little boy all right?"
They all looked at Pusey, who was sitting in a suspicious puddle on the floor in the corner with a bag of sweets and a sticky ring around his mouth.
"Right as rain," said Nanny Ogg. "Nothing worse than a bit of sunburn. He screams his head off the least little thing, bless him," she said proudly, as if this was some kind of rare talent.
"Gither,"
said Granny from under the towel.
"Yes?"
"You knows I don't normally touch strong liquor, but I've heard you mention the use of brandy for medicinal purposes."
"Coming right up."
Granny raised her towel and focused one eye on Magrat.
"Good afternoon, your pre-majesty," she said. "Come to be gracious at me, have you?"
"Well done," said Magrat coldly.
"Can one have a word with you, Mrs. Ogg, outside?"
"Right you are, your queen," said Nanny.
In the alley outside, Magrat spun round with her mouth open.
You!
Nanny held up her hand.
I know what you're going to say, she said, but there wasn't any danger to the little mite. But you... Me? Said Nanny. I hardly did anything. They didn't know he was going to run into the circle, did they? They both reacted just like they normally would, didn't they? Fair's fair. Well, in a way, but... No one cheated, said Nanny.
Magrat sagged into silence. Nanny patted her on the shoulder.
So you won't be telling anyone you saw me wave a bag of sweets at him, will you? She said. No, Nanny. There's a good going to be queen.
Nanny?
Yes, dear?
Magrat took a deep breath.
How did Verence know when we were coming back?
It seems to Magrat that Nanny thought for just a few seconds too long.
Oh, couldn't say, she said at last. Kings are a bit magical, mind. They can cure dandruff on that. Probably woke up one morning and his royal prerogative gave him a tickle.
The trouble with Nanny Ogg was that she always looked as if she was lying. Nanny Ogg had a pragmatic attitude to the truth. She told it if it was convenient, and she couldn't be bothered to make up something more interesting.
Keeping busy up there, are you? She said.
One's doing very well, thank you, said Magrat, with what she hoped was a queenly hauteur.
Which one? Said Nanny.
Which one what?
Which one's doing very well? Me.
Oh, you should have said, said Nanny, her face poker straight.
So long as you're keeping busy, that's the important thing. He knew we were coming back, said Magrat firmly. He'd even got the invitation sorted out. Oh, by the way, there's one for you.
I know. One got it this morning, said Nanny. Got all that fancy nibbling on the edges in gold and everything.
Who's reserve up?
Magrat had long ago got a handle on Nanny Ogg's world view.
RSVP, she said. It means you ought to say if you're coming.
Oh, one'll be along all right. Catch one staying away, said Nanny. Has one's Jason sent one his invite yet? Thought not. Not a skilled man with a pen, our Jason.
Invitation to what? Said Magrat. She was getting fed up with ones.
Didn't Verence tell one? Said Nanny. It's a special play that's been written special for you.
Oh, yes, said Magrat. The entertainment.
Right, said Nanny. It's going to be on Midsummer's Eve.
It's got to be special on Midsummer's Eve, said Jason Ogg.
The door to the smithy had been bolted shut. Within were the 8 members of the Lancre Morris men, 6 times winners of the 15 Mountains All-Comers Morris Championship. 3 times outright, once after 11 hours extra time, and twice when the other finalists ran away. Now getting to grips with a new art form.
I feel a right twit, said Bestiality Carter, Lancre's only baker. A dress on. I just hope my wife doesn't see me.
"Says here," said Jason Ogg, his enormous forefinger hesitantly tracing its way along the page, "that it's a beautiful story of the love of the Queen of the Fairies, that's you, Bestiality,
thank you very much,
for a mortal man, plus a humorous interlude with comic artisans."
"What's an artisan?"
said Weaver the Thatcher.
"Dunno, type of, well, I reckon," Jason scratched his head. "Yeah, they've got 'em down on the plains. I repaired a pump for one once. Artisan wells."
"What's comic about them?"
"Well, maybe people fall down 'em in a funny way."
"Why can't we do a Morris like normal?" said Obadiah Carpenter the tailor,
who was also general poacher, cesspit cleaner, and approximate carpenter with a couple of nails that'll stay up all right.
"Morris is for every day," said Jason. "We got to do something cultural. This come all the way from Arkmore Pork."
"We could do the stick and bucket dance," volunteered Baker the Weaver.
"No one is to do the stick and bucket dance ever again," said Jason. "Old Mr. Thrum still walks with a limp, and it were 3 months ago."
Weaver the Thatcher squinted at his copy of the script.
"Who's this bugger Exeunt Omnes?" he said. "I don't think much of my part," said Carpenter. "It's too small."
"It's his poor wife I feel sorry for," said Weaver automatically.
"Why?"
said Jason. The thing about iron is that you generally don't have to think fast in dealing with it.
And why's there got to be a lion in it?
Said Baker the Weaver.
"'Cause it's a play,' said Jason. "'No one would want to see it if it had a donkey in it. "'Oh, I can just see people coming to see a play "'cause it had a donkey in it. "'This play was written by a real playsmith. "'I can just see a real playsmith putting donkeys in a play. "'He says he'd be very interested to hear how we get on. "'Now, just you all shut up.'
"'I don't feel like the Queen of the Fairies.'
moaned Bestiality Carter. Well, it's like this. The Carter parents were a quiet and respectable Lancre family who got into a bit of a mix-up when it came to naming their children. First, they had four daughters who were christened Hope, Chastity, Prudence and Charity, because naming girls after virtues is an ancient and unremarkable tradition. Then their first son was born, and out of some misplaced idea about how this naming business was done, he was called Anger Carter, followed later by Jealousy Carter, Bestiality Carter, and Covetousness Carter. Life being what it is, Hope turned out to be a depressive, Chastity was enjoying life as a lady of negotiable affection in Ankh-Morpork, Prudence had 13 children, and Charity expected to get a dollar's change out of 75 pence. Whereas the boys had grown into amiable, well-tempered men, and Bestiality Carter was, for example, very kind to animals.
"You'll grow into it," said Weaver. "I hope not."
And you've got to rehearse," said Jason.
"There is no room," said Thatcher the Carter. "Well, I ain't doing it where anyone else can see me," said Bestiality. "Even if we go out in the woods somewhere, people will be bound to see me in a dress." "They won't recognise you in your makeup," said Weaver. "Makeup?"
"Yeah, and your wig," said Taylor the other weaver.
"He's right, though," said Weaver. "If we're going to make fools of ourselves, I don't want no one to see me until we're good at it."
"Somewhere off the beaten track, like," said Thatcher the Carter.
"Out in the country," said Tinker the Tinker.
"Where no one goes," said Carter.
Jason scratched his cheese-grater chin. He was bound to think of somewhere.
"And who's going to play Exeunt Omnes?" said Weaver. "He doesn't have much to say, does he?"
The coach rattled across the featureless plains. The land between Ankh-Morpork and the Ramtops was fertile, well-cultivated, and dull, dull, dull. Travel broadens the mind. This landscape broadened the mind because the mind just flowed out from the ears like porridge. It was the kind of landscape where if you saw a distant figure cutting cabbages, you'd watch him until he was out of sight because there was simply nothing else for the eye to do.